Blog Talk Radio.
Man, I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Anything's possible!
RSD Renegade Radio. Where real guys talk real sports. Allow me to introduce the illustrious three-man booth.
I want winners.
What's your name, boy?
Watch the game changer.
What's your name, boy?
D-Well.
Now, ladies and gentlemen.
T.O.T. Sports Ph.D.
The world famous.
Ray.
They are who we thought they were.
We need more dollars.
R.S.G. Renegade Radio. The plug is about to open.
Everybody has an opinion.
A man must have a code.
We're taking RSG to the next level.
Hello. You play to win the game.
You could gripe about Mike's game, but I don't see shooting percentage being hit.
I mean, I'm not griping the third overall player on my list.
Is it safe?
Nah, I blame it on Nintendo. It's provocative. He's real making excuses. You know, we're not going to make any excuses.
You need to move more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes up. Oh, be a dog. Can't wait. Can you dig it, sucker?
Welcome to the Real Sports Guys. Brought to you by Resistance Digital. RSG, Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. I am your host, Mark is a Game Changer, and one-third of the illustrious three-man booth. Now, before we get into the proceedings this evening, I'd like to introduce the other two-thirds of the illustrious three-man booth. To my left, I got my man, Phil T. Sports PhD. What's happening, Kevin?
Present.
Yes, sir. As always, my man is present and ready to bring it. To my right, we have a special guest with us this evening. I'm sitting in for D. Wills. We have Lamar Powell. Lamar, thank you for sitting in with us. Thank you for joining the RSG fam. You're on with the Renegades tonight. We know you're going to bring it. Say a few words to the people out there, to the listeners.
Thank you for having me tonight, and I'm looking forward to discussing all the good sports topics that's happened during the week, and I really appreciate sitting in with you guys, so let's get it in.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely. So, again, you're listening to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG Renegade Radio, brought to you by Resistance Digital. Make sure you go to Resistance Digital to get all your digital solutions. All those digital problems and questions, get them answered in a quick and efficient way at a low cost. So make sure you hit them up at resistancedigital.com to get all your electronic service needs met. So you could have been anywhere this evening, but you're here listening to the Real Sports Guys, and we appreciate your patronage. First off, we're going to go through a quick rundown of what we have in store for you all this evening. We have a slamming show, as usual, on tap. So sit back, relax. Hopefully you got your favorite beverage of choice. You're ready to listen to some hardcore sports radio. We bring it in a way that it doesn't get brought in any other platform on sports radio. Live, raw, uncut, real perspectives from real dudes just like you. We don't have any corporate allegiances. We don't have to worry about offending corporate sponsors. We don't have to worry about advertising money. None of that. So we get to say what we want to say. You get it unfiltered and raw right here with the Real Sports Guys. Tonight's show, we have during the Funky Editorial. We're going to talk about young QBs in the NFL. Over these first 2 weeks, we've seen quite a few second and first-year quarterbacks start opening day, start the second game of the season, and have a level of success. In the past, that wasn't the norm. Usually rookies struggle and struggled mightily their first couple of years in the league. Since about 2008, we've seen a very staunch, a very noticeable change in the storyline or the story arc of a young quarterback, where now guys are coming in early, being asked to start early, and playing very well. We want to talk about what's attributed to that. We want to talk about which of the young guys do we like the most to have, you know, a very good career, and who do we like the least. So we're going to get into that during the Funky Editorial. After that, we're going to recap NFL Week 2. We're going to get into some things that we think we know about the league after 2 weeks. So make sure you stay tuned for that. That'll be a real live conversation. We're also going to hit you with the five on the black-hand side, which is an RSG exclusive staple, something that we do here on RSG and something you'll only get here on RSG. We hit you with five different things, topics, situations, nouns, verbs, adjectives, however you want to put it. We hit you with five of them, and then we go back and forth freestyle, cypher style, where we just bounce off of one another as we go through. It's an amazing thing, so stay tuned for that. We also going to touch on the MLB playoff races, the wild card races as they begin to heat up. Some of the divisional races are really tight. We're going to check in with those, give you our perspective on that right before we head into NCAA football. We're going to talk about NCAA football, Notre Dame going to the ACC. We're going to talk about some. We're going to do our upset recap. There were some pretty notable upsets this weekend. We're going to touch base on those and hit you off with a little NCAA football talk. To finish up, we're going to talk NCAA basketball, talk about Jim Calhoun, his retirement, where does the University of UConn, particularly the basketball program, go from here. He is that program, so him leaving really is something significant as far as UConn standing as a national power. Hit you with the dog of the week, go into shutdown mode, and blah, out. You got a full-length episode of the Real Sports Guys. All right? So to get us started, like we always do about this time, I'm going to hit you with the Funky Editorial.
Fellas, the one thing we need to say, shall we say it, y'all? Melvin,
right.
Jimmy,
Coleman,
Ryan, say it.
Yeah.
Everybody want to get funky one more time.
All right. So the role of the rookie quarterback or young quarterback has changed a whole lot in the NFL over the last 5 to 6 years. In today's NFL, you draft a quarterback high. The expectation is that he's going to play early. Now, that's kind of always been the expectation. But I think before, it was expected that he was going to take some lumps and he wasn't going to play that well during his first year. Matt Ryan, Joe Flacco, guys like that have kind of shattered that perception. They came in right away. Their teams won. They were successful. Guys after them have done so. Cam Newton, most recently last year, came in and was extremely successful. Had the best rookie season of a quarterback of any quarterback ever, statistically. This year you have Russell Wilson. You have Brandon Wheaton. You have Ryan Tannehill, you have RG3, and you also have Andrew Luck, who will be starting for teams. Also with second-year quarterbacks starting, Blaine Gabbert, Andy Dalton, Cam Newton, and they're probably Jake Locker. There may be some more I'm missing. But there's a lot of young guys who are playing early, and they're having success. And I think now the paradigm is you expect your young quarterback to have success. Now, Phil T, you know the game of football real well. What are some things that you've seen change? What are some things that you can attribute to this change?
Well, I think the biggest thing is the complexity of college and high school offenses. you know, I went to go check out some high school football here last couple of weekends, and I'm just amazed at what high school kids are doing in terms of quarterbacks. They're running no-huddle offenses. They're audibilizing on the line of scrimmage. They're doing a lot of things that you just didn't see kids do 10 to 15 to 20 years ago. And then when you carry that on to the college level, again, I'm not saying that college offenses are more sophisticated or as sophisticated as NFL offenses, but they certainly have stepped up a lot more. We're not talking about the veer that we saw in the 80s and mid-90s, you know, the triple option or the first, you know, read or two, then run type of offenses. You know, you look and see what USC is doing right now. Even with the zone read type of offenses that we saw Vince Young run and even with Tebow down in Florida, it's a little bit more complex than what we saw years ago in college football. So when you see guys like Harbaugh, what he did in Stanford, or other players who have that prep, you know, I watched the Elite 11, which, you know, brings the top 25 quarterbacks, high school quarterbacks together. Trent Dilfer runs that on ESPN. And you look at how much these kids have to study going into college. So I think that probably is the biggest reason why teams are seeing more success. They're putting more on the plates of these rookies and young players, and they're expecting more because they've been prepared to handle this stuff.
I agree. There definitely has been an evolution in the college offense, which I think has led to more passing, which has had a trickle-down effect into the high school ranks, where you're seeing more high school teams throwing the ball. You know, back as far as 15 years ago, when you and I were in high school, you know, there were rarely teams that really threw it around the park like kids do nowadays in high school. So I definitely think you're on point with that analysis. I want to bring in Lamar and ask him the same question. What do you think are some factors that have led to this success of these young quarterbacks?
I'm going to go ahead and agree with Phil. And one thing that I think is helping these young quarterbacks come into the league and be successful is most colleges are running pro-style offenses, like how, for instance, Andrew Luck last year with Harbaugh at Stanford. They ran a pro-style offense, and he came in, and he's been somewhat successful so far in the first couple of weeks. And it helps out that he got his tight end that he went to school with. I think that helps out a lot if you can get pieces that you're familiar with when you go to school or played with previous to help you out at this level.
Yeah, and I also think that front offices have gotten a bit smarter about how to handle young quarterbacks. I think both in the pre-draft process and then also once you get a kid into camp, and you get a kid signed, and you get a kid into your facility, how do you then groom them to be a starter? I think the evolution has come along as far as understanding what the quarterback position means and the level of information you have to be able to process. I think, you know, guys like Jamarcus Russell, guys like Ryan Leaf, cats like that who failed at the position, don't fail because of ability. They fail because of their inability to process information. And I think nowadays in the evaluation process, when GMs are looking at drafting guys, they really take into account how well does this particular athlete process information? How quickly can they digest the playbook? What can they diagram from their college playbook? They want to hear kids break down reads. I don't know if that, again, I've never been in a war room. We're just the real sports guys. We don't have access like that. But I don't think that went into the equation in the past. I think, you know, we all grew up playing football. Most coaches, their philosophy is you take your best athlete and you put them at the quarterback spot. And that was kind of how quarterbacks were chosen when we were coming up. The best athlete, the biggest kid, who was also fast, who, you know, also could throw the ball, that was going to be your quarterback. nowadays, I think that kid is still being picked to be the quarterback at a young age. But I think instead of just letting that kid do his thing, nowadays he's being groomed, developed, and coached. When you talk about guys like Andrew Luck, whose dad was a quarterback, or the Manning boys, whose father was a quarterback, these guys have been groomed and taught how to be a quarterback. Makes you wonder what's wrong with Phil and Sims kids. That's neither here nor there. I'm saying he had like six boys come through college football. Every time I look up, it's the Sims. But they always backups. Somebody's got a Sims on their roster, but they always backups.
You know, one of the things that gets me is when teams can pick up second and third round picks and have them start right away, like the Bengals did with Dalton last year. Even with Russell Wilson in Seattle, are you serious? A second or third round pick, you're going to be able to start and they're functional and they're leading you last year to the playoffs with Dalton, and, you know, Wilson's got them at a 1-1 record. I mean, to me, that speaks to the strength of your scouting program, where you can pick up a kid that nobody else is really willing to put a first round or second round pick to, and all of a sudden you got a third round pick that's leading your football team. To me, when you're making moves like that, I mean, that's like my man Presti in Oklahoma City. I mean, you know how to evaluate talent.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I agree. The talent evaluation has really risen. And there are a lot, you know, I'd say up until about 3 or 4 years ago, the rate for a bust was about, you know, bust to hit on first-round quarterbacks and really quarterbacks in general. Was leaning toward the bust, where most guys were, for the most part, bust as far as high picks. And in recent years, you've seen the trend kind of go the other way where, you know, a lot of these guys who are taken in the first round are at least put in a position to be successful early. Now, whether they can continue to make that jump, which is something that we're going to get into later tonight when we talk about guys like Matt Ryan, Joe Flacco, Mark Sanchez, cats like that who have had success, but they also need to take that next step. And that's where I think you're seeing some of these young quarterbacks really struggle, is to take that next step, and are they going to become elite? They're serviceable. They're good quarterbacks, but do they become elite? I'm going to transition into the second part of the Funky Editorial. I want you guys to each take a turn and give me that young quarterback who you feel like has the most upside, and then tell me why. Tell me what you like about him. And then I want you to tell me who's the guy you're least excited about. That guy who, out of the young guys that are out there right now, those first and second year quarterbacks who are started right today, who's the guy you're least excited about? I'm going to pass it to my man Lamar. I want you to jump in. Give me the guy you're most excited about.
So the guy that I'm most excited about right now is RG3. I mean, having a coach like Coach Shanahan, and they went out this year and picked up some decent weapons, and Pierre Garçon and Moss is still Santana Moss is still a valuable receiver, and they ended up getting rid of Chris Cooley and starting Fred Davis because Davis is more consistent. He's been good in the last few years. He has a few weapons, and outside of the defensive draft picks that the Redskins have made in the last couple of years, they tend to make some good picks on offense. So I like the future of RG3, and I think that team is going to continue to get better, even though they're in a pretty tough division with Dallas, Philadelphia, and New York. I think that in the next 5 years that team, that the front office, like how we just discussed, will be smart enough to evaluate good talent to bring them in and help contribute to our RG3. The quarterback that I'm least excited about is, I'm a Jaguars fan, and I'm not too happy about Blaine Gabbert. I just really don't see him taking Jacksonville to the next level. He had a pretty good college career, and I was surprised he got picked up where he got picked. But I think in order for Jacksonville to be successful, they're going to need that RG3, Andrew Luck-type quarterback. I just think that Blaine Gabbert's going to eventually end up like a Jimmy Clausen, or, I mean, I'm not trying to hate on McCoy in Cleveland or anything, but I think he's going to end up like one of those quarterbacks, and Jacksonville's front office isn't doing the best in trying to bring in good weapons. I mean, they've had Lewis for a couple of years, Mercedes Lewis, and he's a decent tight end, and Jones Drew always get good stats and always help out, but they let what was the receiver? Sims Welker go to St. Louis, and he came back, and he hasn't been the same, and they really don't have anything for receivers. So right now I'm going to have to say Blaine Gabbert is the least favorite right now.
Okay. P.A.D., where do you stand?
Well, first of all, I just want to apologize to my man for being a Jaguar fan. I've never met one. I've never met a
It's all good.
In the words of Bernie Mac, welcome. So the guy that I'm into the least, very easy decision for me. The guy I liked the most was certainly I more went into that. But with the least, Jake Locker, Tennessee. Whoo! I have Chris Johnson on my fantasy league this year, and you know I'm in a point per reception league, and it was painful watching them on Sunday. I mean, Chris Johnson probably lost 5 or 6 receptions because Locker could not throw the check down to him. I mean, yeah, he's throwing it at his ankles. He's throwing it 5 yards in front of him. It was painful. I mean, I thought I was watching Tim Tebow again trying to throw the ball last year. I mean, it was. Locker, first of all, my caveat with this is I think that with quarterbacks, you need to give them a couple of years to really step back and see what they're going to be. But so far, I'm just not impressed with Locker at all. Now, the guy that I think has the most upside, and surprisingly, I'm not going to go with Cam or RG3, who I think are probably the best quarterbacks of the first two-year group right now. But I'm going to go with Christian Ponder in Minnesota.
Ooh.
He's shown me a lot the last couple of weeks in terms of how he's led the Vikings, especially week one, bringing them down the field, leading them into a victory. I like Ponder, and I think Ponder has a strong running game, and I wouldn't be surprised, man, if the Vikings is a surprise team of the year, you know, kind of knocking on the door for the playoffs. I know that's not a right field, but, I mean, this is a defense that was perceived as elite a couple of years ago. They still have pretty much the same core. Adrian Peterson, he's getting healthier and healthier by the game. And Ponder's made some pretty impressive throws. So I don't think Ponder's the best player right now, but as far as upside, I think he has the most potential out of any of these 7 or 8, 9 quarterbacks we've seen start in the last 2 years.
That's a good choice.
Right.
I could definitely see he has some good weapons in Harvin and backup for Adrian Peterson from Stanford, Toby. I forget his last name. But
yeah, right.
That's a good choice. Yeah.
Yeah, Ponder's an interesting pick. I don't dislike Ponder. I can see where you're going with that. I watched a little bit of the Vikings this past week, and he has looked like he's progressed considerably. There are two guys who I'm kind of tied for me as far as guys I don't like. One guy I don't like, it's not necessarily his fault why I don't like him. I just don't like where he was taken. And I'm gonna bring it home with the my man PhD. We're talking about Whedon. You talk about a first round, taking a quarterback or taking any player in the first round is always risky. You got to take somebody, and you hope that guy pans out. Now it becomes even a bigger risk when you take a quarterback, because there's so much riding on the success of that particular position. And when you take a guy with your in the first round, a la Tim Tebow, a lot of expectations come with that. So you want that guy to be ready. Otherwise, you put a lot of pressure on yourself to play a guy who may not be ready. With Brandon Whedon, the Browns took a 28-year-old quarterback in the first round, a rookie in the first round at 28. This guy better be a hit, and he better be a hit right away because if you have to wait 2 or 3 years, he's 33, 32 years old. And in NFL years, that's like 45. That's like getting to the end. So you got 3 years out of a dude, and you still don't know what you got, and in about 6 minutes, he's going to be over the hill. So you better hope you got the right guy. I don't think Brandon Wheaton is that guy. And, you know, people talk about his maturity. 28 in real life is mature. But as far as I'm concerned, he's only played two NFL games. So being 28 doesn't make him any better of an NFL quarterback because he still hasn't played a down in the league. So when people before the season were saying he's more mature than the average, you know, quarterback coming in, yeah, you're right because he's 28, but that doesn't make him a better quarterback. You know, it just doesn't. It doesn't make him any more able to process a lot of information quickly. And so I feel like it was a wasted pick because you took a guy who was 28 in the first round. You need that. If you're going to take a guy in the first round, you need him to be there for 10 years when you're talking about a quarterback. And I don't even know if he has a 10-year career in him. So I didn't like that one. I don't like Brandon Wheaton in Cleveland. I felt like Cleveland shot themselves in the foot. Seemed like they were going in the right direction with the RG3 trade. Oh, no, that wasn't in St. Louis. But they got the picks from the year before from Dallas, and they had a lot of picks. They had an opportunity to really kind of bolster their roster, and I feel like they swung and missed with Wheaton. The other guy I don't like, and this is something that Hard Knocks revealed, Ryan Tannehill. Don't like him. Can't do it. Any quarterback that doesn't, any NFL player, period, unless you're a punter or a kicker, if you don't know the freaking divisions in the NFL.
Cannot play with them. Cannot win with them.
Cannot win with
them. Cannot coach with them. Can't do it.
Can't do it. Ryan Tannehill can't do it. Cannot do it. All right? This guy here did not know the divisions in the NFL. Now, is that necessarily a cardinal sin? No. It's a red flag, though. When you're talking about a guy who needs to know defensive systems, defensive schemes in the NFL inside and out, and he doesn't even know the league well enough to know that the Dallas Cowboys are in the NFC East and the New England Patriots are in the AFC East and the Kansas City Chiefs. These are things that I knew at 8. I knew all the divisions in the NFL by about 8 years old. Now, I was a different cat. You know, I learned how to read by reading the sports section. But still, to me, that was just blasphemous. I am not going to hand over my franchise to a guy who seems like doesn't really love football like that. And if you're going to be the quarterback of an elite-level quarterback, you got to love it because you're going to spend a ton of time studying it, eating it, breathing it, and sleeping it. And so Tannehill, I don't like. That's the guy I don't like. I don't like Tannehill. A guy I do like. On the flip side of the coin, a guy I really do like. And I think, you know, this is more so not necessarily thinking he has more upside, because I think if I'm going strictly upside, there's Mount Rushmore young quarterback upside with RG3, Cam Newton, and Andrew Luck. That's a given. But a guy I like to be successful and a guy I'm rooting for, and this is me being a bit of a homer, is Russell Wilson. This is a dude, and if anybody has had the opportunity to watch the Wisconsin Badgers play since this man left, you can see the impact that he had. They bring back a very similar squad, but there's just not that – there's something missing. There's not that general out there. This guy is a winner. And I know people throw that term around there a lot when it's hard to describe what a guy does well, but he's a winner. He's a football player. He knows how to read defenses. He has a good enough arm. He's mobile. He knows how to change his adjust his launch point to get a good view. Yes, he's short. Yes, he's small. But the dude can play football, and it's undeniable. And I think if Seattle gets some weapons around that kid, you're going to see him really take off. He's already been able to lead that team to a victory. I think that team is going to compete in the NFC West, which isn't a super tough division. I think San Francisco is going to run away with it. But I think Seattle is going to be in the mix to compete for a wild card spot in the NFC. And I think it'll be in large part because of Russell Wilson's ability to simply hold down that position, provide leadership, and get them to wins. So that's the guy that I like to be successful. I think he's going to be, you know, again, RG3, Cam, Luck, they have potential to be all-time level quarterbacks. You know, they have a potential to go down in history. I don't know if Russell has that potential, but I think Russell has the potential to be a very good. I think at some point in his career, he sneaks into that top seven, top eight, you know, that Romo, Phillip Rivers region of quarterbacks. He may not join the elite category, but I think he's going to poke his head into that very good category of quarterbacks. So that's this edition of – that wraps up this edition of the Funky Editorial. Again, you're listening to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio, brought to you by Resistance Digital. Make sure you check out Resistance Digital to get all your digital and electronic needs met. Hit them up at resistancedigital.com. Now, we still going to keep it rolling, still talking at NFL. We want to recap week two. So in order to do that, you know, we're some pretty unruly cats, so we got to provide structure around here. We got to set up some rules. Some rules and regulations, okay?
Okay.
So we just can't say talk because we'll do that. So we're going to break it down, all right? I'm going to toss this one to my man PhD first. Then Lamar, I want you to jump in right behind him.
Okay.
What do we know now? After week two, what do we know now, PhD?
Well, we know that the Texans are pretty good, kind of, maybe not. We don't really know. Primarily because they've beaten the Jags and they've beaten the Dolphins, and we're not really sure how good they are. So that's what we kind of know. What do we know so far? We know Jay Cutler, man, he has turned the page. He's got a bunch of nice toys and Jeffers and Marshall. Well, we don't really know that because he looked like doo-doo week two.
Cutler always has a bad game every year like that. We could even go back to a couple of years ago when they played the Giants and he got sacked 9 times and had a concussion. He's always good for one of those games. I think Chicago will bounce back, though. It's going to be tough in the division. They get Green Bay once more. And Detroit, you know, they always start out good, but we'll actually see how long they're good this year. As you pointed to later, Minnesota will be tough, but I could definitely see Chicago beating them twice. And then they have to go through the NFC West. And as we discussed about that, too, Seattle's going to be tough and San Fran is going to be tough. But they play St. Louis this week, and I think they'll bounce back and they'll beat Arizona. So I could see the Bears, they'll be all right. I just think this was their bad game of the year, like how they had the last couple years.
Yeah, and as far as Cutler goes, and we're going to get into Jay Cutler a little bit more later, but, you know, you just can't do that. You don't push another grown man. I mean, that's some grown man. That's grown man code. You know, this guy code. You know, this girl code. You know, but then there's grown man code. And there's certain things you just don't do to another grown man. You don't yell at me and then push me, bump me on national TV and think I'm going to be okay with it. You can do those things, but we might have a problem at some point in the evening. You know, it's a line you can cross if you want to. That's all. I mean, that's all I got to say about old Cuddy. Things that we know after week two. San Francisco's defense is gangster, not to be played with. That is a squad of dudes that bring it. And they bring it in a way that it hasn't been brought in a minute. I mean, that defense is reminiscent of the Buccaneers in the early 2000s and the late 90s Ravens as far as the level at which they lay wood on people. I mean, they bringing it. It's like they're hitting with, you know, it's like somebody's throwing concrete blocks at dudes out there. I like watching that defense. Another thing that we know after week two, something's wrong with Peyton Manning. I don't know if you had a chance to watch the game last night, but, you know, and we listen to other sports radio shows because we enjoy listening to sports radio. And listening to Van Pelt and Russillo earlier, Russillo was kind of excusing Peyton Manning. Now, I watched those first couple of passes that he threw for picks. Yes, he threw in the coverage, but I think he threw in the coverage because he thought he could lace the ball in there. This is Peyton Manning. It's not like the first time he read a defense. I mean, this dude is like, you know, as far as reading defenses go, this guy is like, it's like reading binary. He's like Neo in the Matrix, man. He just sees numbers, you know. Yeah, he just sees green numbers. He can do what he wants. This is who this guy is. Watching that ball flutter out of his hand, to me that says something ain't right. And maybe week one, you know, he had that fresh arm. But week two, week three, that arm seems like it's slowing down a little bit. So that's just something I watch for. Because right. If he can't go, and if he's not the Peyton Manning of old, that team is not going to meet the expectations that a lot of people out there in Denver have for that squad. There's something to keep an eye on. You know what I'm saying? I'm not a doctor. You know, I just play one on TV. You know, Peyton's arm looked. What did you guys think? PAZ, what did you think? You saw the game. What did you think?
Yeah,
PAZ?
You
still play a couple of passes.
Yeah, we was texting back and forth, man, and. Yeah, I mean, his arm, in the words of Royster, his arm looked like a wet noodle. you know, in a couple of situations. But then later in the game, he threw some seeds. I mean, he threw some passes that displayed a nice level of velocity. So, you know, one of the things that I was reminded of is Peyton's always kind of had a herky-jerky, funky, unorthodox type of release. And in the pocket, I mean, he's never really looked comfortable. So, you know, when I thought back to some of his days in Indianapolis, I mean, he tried to throw the ball with touch here and there and whatnot. So, so I'm not going to quite call the doctor and say that, you know, this guy needs a transplant in the arm quite yet. I'm going to hold out judgment until week four.
That's a good call. It'll be interesting to see what he does this weekend against Dan Houston at home, correct?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that Houston defense, it's way better than Atlanta. Even though Atlanta did have some nice pieces that they picked up in the offseason on defense. The three interceptions that he had last night was ridiculous. But it'll really we'll learn something this weekend when he plays Houston at home.
Yeah, you know, again, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a doctor at all. But I think it's worth monitoring because, again, that week one, and maybe he's just an older cat, man. And we're all there now. I mean, we're not professional athletes, so we get there a lot quicker than these guys. But you hit that point where, you know, it takes you about halfway through that first game. You know, you're playing a little pickup ball. It takes you about halfway through that first game. You know, you're playing a 15. It's not until about 0.7 or 8 where you really get your groove and you really start to get loose and you get good and lathered up and now your muscles are all warm and now you're ready to go. And so maybe that's what Peyton is experiencing right now. He does have a lot of rust. And so maybe it takes him a bit to get that arm fired up. You know, us old guys, when we hit the court, we always say, just give me a minute, youngster. I get it going in a minute.
Right.
I get it going in a minute.
Suicide. Start doing suicides on the sideline. Yo,
right.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get stretched out, man.
Oh, man, yeah. You know, a funny experience with that, man. When I was back in my college days, you know, I was getting towards the end of my college basketball career. My brothers, you know, I have four younger brothers, and these guys are still in high school. And me and my youngest brother, we go to the gym and play some ball. And I started stretching. And this guy starts cracking up, right? You know, My youngest brother's Mike Flowers. He was a guest host a couple weeks back. He starts cracking up, like, why are you stretching? You know, he's about 16, 17 years old. And I'm like, you'll understand one day. And fast forward, he headed toward the end of his college basketball career, and we're going to play some pickup ball at the gym. And he's stretching. He's like, and he sees me looking at him. I'm like, yep, you get it now. He's like, yeah, I get it now. Father time ain't no joke. That's all.
That's true.
That's all, you know. So a couple of games I wanted to highlight from week two and just reflect on real quick. Now, right now, you can't really tell a story of week two in the NFL without talking about the work of the replacement refs. As we talk about this game, as we talk about these games in particular, just any instances where you saw a good referee or bad referee or where you saw the refs have an impact, just throw that out there for the folks, because that's something that you can't really talk about these games without really noting some of the impact, both, you know, appropriate and inappropriate, that refs are having on games right now. The first game I want to toss out there, and I want Lamar to lead us into this conversation, Ravens versus Eagles. The Eagles pull out a one-point victory on a late Mike Vick touchdown. First off, what do you think of this Eagles team, Lamar?
I think that that was a huge – that both wins, actually, the win in Cleveland and the win in at home against Baltimore were very good. I could see Philadelphia bouncing back this year, 9-7, 10-6 team. Super Bowl bound, I don't think they're as good as Green Bay or San Fran or I know we talked about this, but even Chicago. I'm going to have to throw Chicago out there. And I think Atlanta's for real this year. I think this is Atlanta's year where they make that next step. So they fall, I'd say Philly would be fifth or sixth best, so they fall in the wild card, I'd say.
Okay. And what did you think of that particular – what do you think of Mike Vick's performance thus far?
So far, it's been up and down, but he's been clutch when he's needed to be clutch. For instance, last week he had a couple of – it seems like every time you watch him and he's throwing, he has that delivery, you don't know where it's going. And Celek had a very good game last week, and Jackson had some catches, and Macklin had some catches, and even though he went out with injury, and Avant has some catches. They have some good weapons, but it's just sometimes he throws and he makes a decision, and it's just like, what is he thinking? For instance, that one, going back to the replacement refs, I know it was inside 2 minutes and it had to get reviewed, but what did you guys think about when he was getting tackled, and they thought it was a fumble, but, I mean, clearly it was a forward pass, you know?
Yeah, I saw that particular play, and, you know, thank God for replay.
I know,
because,
right?
Because it would have been a game-turning play. And thinking about the refs in this particular game, this was a game that got chippy right away. It got, you know, you had a couple scuffles. You had some jawing back and forth between the two teams. And, again, if there were two teams that – there are some teams that embody the personality of their city. And Philly and Baltimore, I wouldn't put a Philly or a Baltimore cat in the room together if I had to, all right? Just your regular gym-pop Baltimore, your regular gym-pop Philly cat, I'm not putting them in a room together and not expecting some furniture to be moving at some point in that particular session. And I think that's what you saw with these two teams. The refs really didn't know how to handle it. They didn't really know how to reel it in. And I think that's what you're seeing a lot with these replacement refs. That's where I see the most where they're lacking in the most is game management and management of tempers and attitudes. PhD, I want to bring this brother in real quick. What'd you think of the Ravens and Eagles?
I thought it was a great football game. You know me. I'm a big Mike Vick supporter. I don't know if you remember that video he put out a few years ago. There's Mike Vick supporters all over the place. But I'm a big Mike Vick supporter, man. So I'm always itching to see him do well. And, you know, kind of like how Lamar mentioned, it's pretty impressive that they played so poorly the Eagles and pulled out two victories against a decent Cleveland team, at least defensively, and then against a really good team that looked good last week in the Ravens. So I, too, have a problem with some of the with the replacement referees. You know, watching the Tennessee game with Jake Locker, you know, he got tackled and a play that should have been played, you know, whistled dead and, you know, guys are getting injured. Same thing we saw with the Philly game, people diving all over the place on an incomplete pass. You know, some of these non-calls, you know, think about what happened to Sean Lee with the Cowboys on Sunday. Some of these non-calls and just not taking control of the game. Man, I thought we were going to see a rumble in the palace, like a repeat of what happened in the palace with the Pistons and the Pacers, man. On some of these games that I was watching this weekend in the NFL, because, you know, partially because boys will be boys, but also these replacement refs just can't take control of the field, take control of the game, call the flags they need to early. You know, I think of the St. Louis game, man. Cortland Finnegan, boy, oh, boy.
Habitual line stepper.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, on some level, either they shouldn't have called, like, through the flag on the guy from Washington, and again, man, he blew it. You know, dumb move receiver, I forget his name, or it should have been double fouls. It should have been double fouls, double personal fouls, because you don't want to see a game decided on that where it's like, okay, the agitator, you know, got away scot-free. So, and man, I put all these issues on the replacement refs.
I agree. That's why I feel like, that, you know, I don't know the rules that well. I know holding when I see it. I know pass interference. I think I know pass interference when I see it. You know, I'm the average cat. You know, I know when something look real bad. So I'm not going to really get at them about, you know, whether or not the ball should be, you should get 10 yards and a first down for this particular. I don't know. I just go by what they tell me, man. Whatever they say is golden with me. But as far as managing the game, that's where I feel like, you know, that's a big part of refereeing that gets lost, that gets taken for granted and unappreciated. Is how you manage all those altercations. That, because these dudes are losing it out there. I mean, all of these dudes are a moment away from just, like, murking each other, because that's the nature of football. And so you got to provide some sort of decorum. You know, you got to provide some sort of a generally atmosphere about how you go about the game, or it just becomes like Sing Sing in there, man. It's like the yard.
I agree. They have no control out there. Even in that that Bears-Packers game where I think it was Matthews pushed Kamey or whatever, the tackles, and then he pushed him back, and then he got the personal foul. And then at the end of the game of the Giants in Tampa Bay, what did you guys think of that, where the defensive line tried to go after Eli?
Oh, you know what I say, man? To me, that's whatever. You know, Coughlin could be mad. Shiano can say, you know, hey, we playing to the whistle, and I think they're both right. You know, I think Coughlin, if I'm Coughlin, I'm mad about that, and I think he has a right to be mad about that. That's his quarterback. You know, in the words of Terrell Owens, you know, that's my quarterback.
Right.
You know, you got a right to be mad. I ain't mad at him for being mad. You got to stand up for your guy. You can't let that happen. On the other side of that coin, I ain't mad at Shiano either for teaching his guys to play with. I mean, this is a team that won what? Or lost their last 10 games last year. So effort is an issue. So, you know, if I'm the coach, I want you playing until that final whistle blows. And if we got a shot to get that ball, get the ball. You know, get the ball. If something happens, something happens. You know, so I don't fault either guy. I think it's much to do about nothing. You know, but I definitely think that I'm cool with that. How do you feel about that, PhD?
I'm with you 100%, man. I won't even repeat it. I'm with you 100%. You know, on some level, you know what? I'm not even going to repeat it. I'm with you 100%.
All right. You're listening to Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG Renegade Radio, brought to you by Resistance Digital. We are now recapping week two in the NFL. And I want to bring in the legendary, the legend around these parts. We got our man Ray in the house.
Ray.
How you doing, Ray?
Good.
Now, Ray, I'm going to go to you because I know you're an opinionated cat. And
yeah,
I want to hear your take on Joe Flacco. We're talking about the Ravens-Eagles game. Joe Flacco looked like a world beater week one. Week two, not so much. What do you think about this cat?
You know, that's Joe Flacco. You know, I think Phil and I talked about it last year. You know, Joe Flacco is a good quarterback. He's got some good talent around him. But he's going to be up and down like that. There's no consistency with Joe. You know, he just I wouldn't bet on him, you know. I ain't putting no money on Joe.
Now, we talking about games from week two.
Sure.
I'm gonna go ahead and set you up real quick. Bears Packers. Jay Cutler.
Oh, Jay.
Give us a take, Ray.
Jay is like Scottie Pippen. Jay is like Scottie Pippen. He's good until you rattle his cage a little bit, and then he gets outside of his game. You know, if you just remember back to Scottie Pippen, every time he went into New York, all he had to do was slap him once, and he couldn't play. He just folded up, you know, like he wasn't there. Jay does that to Green, you know, Green Bay does that to Jay. They rattle him up a little bit, and then they own him. He's pushing players. I thought Wilson was going to whoop his tail, you know. I thought he lost his mind. I thought Giles was going to choke him out right there. That's Jay Cutler. You know, he'll
bounce back.
Did you
hear what Charles said? Did you hear what Charles said after the game when he got interviewed?
No, what did he say?
Well, for the listeners out there, Jay Cutler made a comment during the week that, in my opinion, got taken out of context. You know, the Packers were talking about they're going to use press coverage, and, you know, Jay's pretty much like, good luck, you know, because I've got, you know, I got some beasts on the outside in Marshall and Jeffers. You know, good luck trying to do that. And after the game, Charles Woodson, I mean, he pretty much like, yeah, whatever. We're not worried about the guys that are outside because, you know, if we just out there, Jay's going to throw us the football. You know, he's going to give us some opportunity. You know, Jay's going to throw us some interceptions. Oh, yeah. Oh, it was epic. It was epic, man.
Yeah.
And the way he said it, it was just kind of like matter-of-factly. Like, man, we was in the film room, like, whatever. Jay's going to give us plenty of opportunities for interceptions. And he did.
But in defense of Jay, you know, let's be honest, that man was running for his life. You know, the Packers were beating him up like you know, he's a Pop Horner player. They were just going through everybody. So,
yeah, I mean, Clay Matthews and him got real intimate. You know, I thought they might have needed to blur some of the action between those two because Clay was all over that dude. You know what I mean? They might have needed to censor some of that, you know, put a NC-17 warning on it. Clay was getting freaky back there. But, you know, I as someone who is half Bear fan, it's disheartening with Cuddy because the guy is good. The guy is a good quarterback. But in the same sense, man, you know, that whole theory about would you take this cat into a dark alley with you? Nah.
Right.
I'm not going into a dark alley with Jay Cutler, even if he is 6'3", 230. We ain't going to a back alley together because as soon as the guns get drawn, Cuddy's out.
Marcus, I got to put you out there on blast, Marcus. So you say you were a half Bear fan. Where's the other half?
Yeah, I'm a half Bear fan. Yeah, I'm
Where's
a half Packer
half?
Fan, man. It's crazy.
Whoa!
Right?
A half Bear and Packer fan. I have met
man,
a
I was
half
born,
Bear.
I was born and grew up in Chicago, man. I lived in Wisconsin almost, you know, 18 years now. So, I mean, I'm conflicted, man. I'm seeing somebody about it. I mean, come on.
If you listen to Michael Irvin after the game, you know, I think Michael Irvin hit it right on the head. You know, at some point, Jay's got to sit down and say, hey, this is my fault. I lose these games. We lose these games. I turn this ball over this much. You know, I get sacked this much. You know, at some point, but Jay doesn't do that. Jay wants to tell you the offensive line isn't right. And Jay wants to say, you know, guys are cutting the routes off short. At some point, you know, you're the guy on the field. You are the general. And you just say, hey, I just messed this up. You know, this is a game that we expect to win every year. You know, we don't expect to split. If we're going to win the Central, we got to beat the Packers twice. These games I should be up for. And Jay just folds up. He just folded up against Green Bay. And they
like
bank
card
on it.
Table.
Yeah, they bank on it, you know.
Yeah, I think at this point you do. What did you think about that? What did this game say about the Packers? They got a little bit of a running game from House Shoes Benson. That's our nickname around these parts of Cedric Benson. They got a bit of a running game for him. He showed up, helped out a little bit, which is great. That's what they signed him for. Rodgers still, they still don't look like that well-oiled machine that they were last year. Because last year, they was out there playing Tecmo Bowl.
Both teams play hard, man.
Everybody was there.
Both teams play hard. Both teams play hard. Both teams play hard. God bless and good night.
Yeah, that was a gospel straight from Rasheed Wallace. The Packers, man, they really look, last year they were playing Tecmo Bowl out there and everybody was in excellent condition. You know, guys are just, Rodgers is just cutting up defenses. They don't look that well-oiled this year. Lamar, I want to pull you in real quick. What are your impressions of the Packers in these first two games?
I think that the Packers would be really good, actually. The first two games that they had, I mean, San Francisco making it to the NFC Championship last year, and they're going to be just as good this year, if not take that next step and go to the Super Bowl. And a rival in Chicago who always plays tough and who's going to be a tough team, and I think that in the postseason they'll be there as well. I think that the Packers, we thought that it would hurt them that Jens was out with his injury, but it seems like they didn't miss a beat. They have some good weapons on offense, and it seems like that defense is just what's going to carry them. So I think if everybody stays healthy and if Benson can continue to give them what he brought to the table on Thursday, I think that, who knows, they could win it all this year and go back to the Super Bowl. They have so many weapons. It's crazy. I mean, Driver, Jennings, Nelson. I like the Cobb kid that returns and receiver. And Jermichael Finley. I mean, they can come at you in so many different ways. I think that they're going to be – I can see them winning the division, and they're going to be tough to beat this year.
All right, so the last final game we kind of want to follow up on. This is another game that was a very tightly contested game. A lot of interesting things going on, both on the field and also with the refs. Again, another game that kind of got a little bit out of hand. It was the Broncos-Falcons Monday night game. The Falcons win 27-21 in control of the game most of the time. I want to throw this one out there to my man, PhD. The Falcons, they look – like they're about to turn the corner. Matt Ryan looks like he's about to step his game up. You know, I kind of put D. Wills. He's not here to defend himself, so I'm gonna take a shot at it. I kind of put D. Wills out there on Twitter last night because you know we had that conversation during the draft last April about whether or not we look back at the 2008 about whether or not you take CJ 2K or Matt Ryan first. And I said Matt Ryan, and you guys, D-Wills in particular, kind of went hard on me saying that you should take TJ 2K. If you redraft, you take him number one. And I still say you take Matt Ryan. And not necessarily because Matt Ryan is a way better player than CJ 2K, but it's the quarterback position. And if you're right at that position, you can do a lot of things.
Do you still stand by that statement, PAZ? He sighed like, why you bringing up old stuff?
I mean, thought you was getting on Devon, man, you know.
I'm just asking you. I got Devon on Twitter. I'm just asking you, you gonna ride, you gonna keep riding with Suge on this one?
All right, man, so ask the question again. Ask the witness the question again.
All right. So you understand, you know, Devon, Suge Knight, Marion Wilson is under fire right now. Do you stand by the statement that if you were to redraft the 2008 NFL draft over again, you would take Chris CJ2K Johnson over Matty Ice Ryan?
Yes. Yes, I do. Because the impact that he had on the league his first 3 to 4 years were just phenomenal. And again, man, we early on, we in the second week of the season, and, you know, what does Chris Johnson have? 20 carries for about 22 yards? And I'm not exaggerating. I think he's around 20 carries for about 15 carries for about 30 yards. So,
yeah.
But
didn't he only have 4 yards the first week?
Yeah. It was pretty bad. Yeah.
Problematic.
So I think it's kind of early on, man. I think his troubles are going to be strongly correlated with Jake Locker's troubles. And whether they stick with Locker or they come with Hasselbeck, I think whenever the quarterback play increases, teams won't be able to stack the box against Johnson. Now, Matt Ryan's coming into his own, man. But he also has weapons around him. You know, he also has a solid defense. And really, when you look at starting receivers plus a tight end and a running back, I'm not sure if anybody else in the league, maybe one or two other teams, has more talent in those three supporting spots that Ryan has. So yeah, man, I stick with it. But I'm also in the camp that I don't think Johnson's done. I think we're going to see another strong one or two dominant years from him.
Okay. All right. There you have it, folks. People of the court, jurors. I rest my case. I'm not going to harp. You know, we talked about Peyton Manning Ray. Did you get a chance to watch the game last night?
I sure did.
What do you think of Peyton?
I think you guys, what I thought about Peyton wasn't as highly as I thought about that Atlanta defense. And as much as you wanted to look at Peyton and go, you know, wet noodle and his arm ain't there and all of those things, that Atlanta defense last night didn't show him anything, didn't show him a thing. And so when you talk about how well Matt Ryan is doing, look at all that Atlanta's doing on both sides of the ball and the defense they're playing and the opportunities that they're getting. You know, that makes Matt Ryan look really good, too. And you get that short field and you get those turnovers and you get all those opportunities. I haven't seen a defense ever look as lackadaisical and look like they didn't know what they were doing more than Atlanta. And yet they knew exactly what they were doing. They weren't giving anything away to Peyton Manning at all. Peyton Manning would have shredded them if he knew what they were going to do. But those cats weren't going down in the stands. They were standing around in spots. You had 8 guys coming up to the line of scrimmage, and Peyton Manning couldn't figure it out. But everybody in Atlanta knew exactly what they were doing, and they played a hell of a football game on that defensive side. If you get a chance to TiVo that, take a look at that. When you see them line up, they gave nothing away, and all of a sudden Peyton couldn't audible. He couldn't run that no huddle. He didn't know what they were doing, but Atlanta knew what they were doing, and they did it the whole game. And if they can keep doing it, you're going to see defenses all over the league try to follow that mold. Because that team didn't look like they knew. They looked like they were playing pickup football on a Sunday afternoon just before the real game was supposed to be played.
Broke it down. Let it ever be broken. All right. Now we're gonna move on to impressive performances. Who balled? Lamar. Who, in your opinion, who balled this week?
I had three guys in mind when it comes to that. First guy I want to go with is Eli Manning. That was a great comeback on Sunday against Tampa Bay. They were down, what was it, 14 points, two touchdowns?
Yep.
And he ended up with 500-plus yards and, was it two or three touchdowns?
Yeah, three touchdowns.
Yep. Yeah, I think he had a good weekend. And second person I want to go with was a guy I have on my fantasy team. Well, I should have started but didn't start. I started Jamal Charles instead of him, but Marshawn Lynch. I think he had a great week.
Yeah, he did. He had a very good week. You made the same mistake I did, starting Jamal Charles, the old punk self. It made me mad. You're going to get put on – hey, Phil, you're going to get put on that D'Angelo Williams list.
Yeah. I had Jonathan Stewart, too, and I already dropped him. So Charles is headed towards the bench, and I think Lynch is starting this weekend.
All right. PAD, impressive performers.
I'm going to go with Vincent Jackson, man. 9 catches, 175 yards, and 2 touches. Man, he was just phenomenal. And this is a guy that we saw bits and pieces of his talent in San Diego, but we just didn't see that consistency, man. I think he's building a great rapport with Freeman down there in Tampa Bay, and I think he's going to have a Pro Bowl season.
All right. And my performer of the week, somebody who impressed me a lot, was Reggie Bush, running for 172 yards, looking like, you know, what everybody thought he was going to be coming out of college. And actually, you know, leading that Miami team to a win, which is a team that they're going to be hard-pressed to win games. But if he continues to play like that, they're going to have an opportunity. So hats off to him for really carrying that squad to a victory, a game that I picked them to lose. I didn't think they were going to win that game or had a shot to win that game. I'm not picking them in very many games this year. And that was one of the many I'm not picking them in.
Game change.
So, yes, sir.
Game changer. I got to ask you, and I'm about 15 minutes late, but did you mention that you were feeling good, that the Packers were playing, like, Tecmo Ball on excellent condition? Did you say that?
Yeah. That's how they played last year, yeah.
Can you break down the excellent condition?
Yeah, I always play that for the listeners out there. If you know what I'm talking about, then you know what I'm talking about. But if you don't know what I'm talking about, Tecmo Bowl, classic video game. It came out, you had about 8 teams on it, only the playoff teams got on it. Then the sequel came out, Super Tecmo Bowl. Super Tecmo Bowl had all the NFL squads on there. Now, in this game, you know, you could play a season. And when you played the season mode, your guys, like, fluctuate in how well they were feeling. And you have guys in, like, bad condition. You know, they'd be average, they'd be good, or they'd be excellent. Now, if guys were in excellent condition, basically it meant that you couldn't tackle them. Like, you know, there was nothing you could do with those guys. Like, the quarterback was going to be super accurate. He was going to never miss a beat. Guys were going to get open. They were going to, you know, they were going to do the super jump. You get that extra screen. You get the super jump screen. I mean, these guys are just hitting on all cylinders, man. And so there were certain players on the game, Jerry Rice, Derek Thomas, Barry Sanders, Christian Okoye, Bo Jackson, QB Eagles. Certain guys on that game, Henry Jones, certain guys on that game, if they were in excellent condition, they were pretty much unstoppable factors. Like, they could win a game by themselves. And if you were playing somebody with that particular player, you were going to be in trouble. Not to mention the Jerry Ball dive over the center trick. But, yeah, so excellent condition. I mean, the Packers were in excellent condition last year. I mean, it was a video game out there, and they were putting up ridiculous numbers, not making any mistakes. So that's what I meant by that. You know, if you know, you caught it. If you don't know, now you know.
I don't have facts to back this up.
Hello? You play to win the game.
Yes, sir. So now, again, you're listening to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio, brought to you by Resistance Digital. Make sure you hit up the guys at resistancedigital.com to answer all your digital questions and needs. Make sure you check them out, Resistance Digital. All right, now we got to get into the five on the black hand side. So let me hit you off with that real quick.
Five on the black hand side.
Now, continuing to talk NFL, this five on the black hand side is going to be pretty quick because we've dug into these cats quite a bit already in the show. I got five quarterbacks right now. I'm going to lay it on the fellas. The question I want you all to ponder, you know, we pretty much agree on the top three guys, Brady, Rodgers, Breeze. That next two or three, you know, you get your Eli's, your Roethlisberger's, guys like that get kind of tossed in there. After that, it's just a jumbled mess right now. And maybe this season we start to get some clarity and there starts to be some stratification among that next seven guys to round up the top 10 quarterbacks in the league. I got five guys who are kind of in the mix. And I want you to forecast whether or not they finish in the top 10, outside of the top 10. And let me know if you think they jump into that elite category, all right, where they jump into that top five. All right, so the first guy up, and I want PhD to chime in first. Then I want Lamar to hit me off with one. And then, Ray, you go ahead and pounce in there and give us some input. All right? First one, we talked about him a little bit already, Flacco. Is he in the top 10? Does he go elite, PhD? What say you?
No, he's not in the top 10, and no, he doesn't go elite. I'd rather use my time on the floor to talk about Eli Manning and why I think that he's in the elite group. Eli, man, his team always has a shot when he's on the field. Eli can look horrible the first couple of quarters, the first couple of possessions. I mean, think about on Sunday, man. This cat looked so bad. He threw a pick six on the first possession of the game. I mean, he just looks horrible. And when he runs off the field, he just has that dull look on his face. Like, okay, don't give me that look, Eli. So, but throughout the game, man, I mean, think about the playoffs. He always gives his team a shot to win at the end. So, Flacco, no. Eli, yes.
All right. Lamar.
I'm going to have to go with no. I don't think he's a top 10 quarterback, but you can put him at 11 or 12. I think that perfect example, you can look at week one and you can look at week two, even though week two was a road game. I mean, this guy looked like he was going to take the next step during week one, and he didn't play too bad on Sunday, but, I mean, still they didn't get the win. He has some decent weapons. I wish they would use Anquan Boldin more. He went through a lot a couple of years ago, and it seems like that they got him. He hasn't been as effective as he was in Arizona, and Torrey Smith is a pretty decent weapon, and Rice eventually I think is going to get it going, and he might leave the league this year. But going back to Flacco, I just think that he's a little – I don't think he's there yet, that next step. I'm pretty sure we're going to talk about this guy, but Ryan's doing what he needs to do. I just don't see Flacco being a top 10 quarterback and doing what he needs to do to take that step. But I'd put him at in between 11 and 15, though. I'll say that.
All right. Ray, Flacco top 10?
In the top 10. I could see him in the top 10 simply because that, you know, he's not going to be asked to do – he doesn't have to do it all on that team. You know, they have a stout defense. They have a great running game. They have other things that they can fall back on. And you know, when you talk about a top 10, if you're just looking at yardage and touchdowns, then perhaps not. But if you're just talking about success, if he just does what he has to do, if he's not asked to, you know, take over a game and win, you know, they're going to be effective in that team. You're going to look at him a lot different when they're, you know, 10-6 or you know, doing something that is making noise. So, you know, after that first week, you know, everybody talked about how well this Ravens team looked and how well they're going to, you know, send off Ray Lewis, and, you know, it may be his last year. So Flacco could be a top 10 quarterback. He just doesn't have to do, you know, don't put him in a position to make him do stuff. That's, you know, he's not going to do it that well. Elite, he'll never be an elite quarterback.
Wow.
Okay.
Never.
Never.
Okay. Strong words. Strong words. Now, again, this one I wish D. Wells was here because this is his guy. Philip Rivers. Lamar, is Philip Rivers a top 10 quarterback? And if so, is he elite?
I'm going to go with yes on this one. I think Rivers is a top 10 quarterback. Elite, I think it's still questionable. Seems like that their front office has made some moves in the last couple of years that are kind of questionable. And now bringing in the weapons that they have in Ryan Matthews and bringing over Robert Meacham from New Orleans, with them trying to help Rivers or giving him the weapons to help, we'll see if it happens. But I'm going to go, he's in the top 10, but elite, I don't know if he's elite yet. I'd say if he's in the top 10, he'll be at 10.
Okay, okay. PhD, what you thinking? Yeah, if you look at Rivers up until, like, going into the 2011 season, Rivers was considered right on the cusp. You know, a lot of the talk that we were doing with Matt Ryan now and even Flacco, that's what we were doing with Rivers. And my issue with Rivers has always been consistency. And at this point, this guy is entering his ninth full season league, and we still got consistency issues. So at some point, he is what he is. You know, in the words of Denny Green, you know, he is who we thought he was. So I'm going to say no, he's no longer a prospect to be in the top 10. I don't think that he's going to emerge this season into the elite. You know, unfortunately, he's playing without major firepower. You know, Matthews is out. They took away Vincent Jackson, and they replaced him with Robert Meacham. So, I mean, he's losing. You know, I mean, he's losing tools by the minute. So I say nay on Rivers.
All right, Ray, weigh in.
I kind of feel the same way. I think that Philip Rivers is a decent quarterback, but, you know, has he ever really had enough talent around him ever? I mean, he had Gates for a year, and he looked golden. You know, the first year that Gates was in the league, Philip Rivers was an elite quarterback. But every year, you know, they're changing their personnel so much, and they're changing that whole – that receiving core, he's never either had healthy or there for 2 years in a row. And so, you know, he's as decent a quarterback as he might be, you have to evolve. And you evolve by having, you know, your Deion Branches around you, or your Greg Jennings around you. Those guys that you can look over and give a nod and make a play when you have to. And Philip Rivers, you know, hasn't had anybody healthy or there long enough to do anything like that with.
Well said. Well said. All right, we're going to move on to number three. Ray, I want you to lead us off with this guy, Cutty Mack. Jay Cutler. Top 10, if so, is he elite?
You know, that's, again, it's such a hard thing to say, but I've never been a Cutler fan. Last year, you know, he was in an offense that he's been in an offense until this year again, that that really should allow him to do everything but really be an elite quarterback and look like an elite quarterback. This year they got him back being, you know, a regular old quarterback and dropping back and making plays. You could say that he has talent. You could say that, you know, he doesn't have an offensive line. You could say a lot of things, but you got to have a lot of dog to be a good quarterback. You don't even have to be the best quarterback to be an elite quarterback. And Jay just doesn't have that dog in it. You know, I don't like anybody that'll quit. You know, and I'm not talking about the Packer game where he got hurt. Hurt is hurt, but, you know, some quarterbacks, if you knock them down enough, they just get up and beat you. And Jay's never going to do that.
Never.
Again, never. That's a strong word.
All right, all right. Lamar, Jay Cutler, elites, top 10, what do you think?
I'm going to go with top 10, but I'm going to go where I'm going to put him at 6 or 7. He definitely – I like what Chicago did and went out and with the weapons that they got and Marshall and Bush and drafted Jeffries. But the one thing that they still haven't fixed is their line. I mean, just because they moved a couple of people over, I mean, it's going to be a better line. And I know that Camry was hurt last year and he's coming back, but I still don't think that Bears line is where it needs to be to win it all. I mean, it's been consistent for the last couple of years, but, I mean, consistent can only get you so far. I think Cutler definitely has the talent to be an elite quarterback, but as Alola said, he when he gets knocked down, it tends to just take him out of his game, and until he gets rid of that, he'll be elite. But he's definitely a top 10 quarterback, so I'll give about 6 or 7.
Okay. Now, you know, just thinking about the whole Cutler. Jamarcus Webb situation. Do you think Cutler was just trying to illustrate something for people out there? I mean, I'm surprised, you know, maybe if I was Cutler, I'd have thrown a punch. I just swung at Jamarcus Webb and see if he'd have blocked you, because he ain't blocked nothing else all night. And then talk to Bonham if he did block it. Are you going to block that? But you can't block Clay Matthews. That's what I would have done. Just slug on him, see if he'll block it. I mean, why not get into a fight with a dude that ain't blocked nothing all night, man? You can punch him all day. Anyway, PhD, what are you at on Cutler?
I want winners. Cannot play with them. Cannot win with them. Cannot coach with them. Can't do it.
They are who we thought they were.
Hey, sometimes you gotta let the coaches speak, man. You know, we got the Black Coaches Association in the house. The Fire Black Coaches Association is speaking on it. We got Mike Singletary and Danny Green coming in. No, sir. You know, what more can I say? So we gonna keep it rolling. We got number four, we got Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan, PhD, since you let the Fire Black Coaches Association speak for you in the last, I'm gonna let you lead us off right here. Matt Ryan, top 10, if so, is he elite?
I want winners.
So with him, man, he's won. You know, every year he's been in the league, he's made the playoffs. I think maybe the exception of one year he didn't make it. I like this kid, man. He's poised in the clutch. You know, I've seen him play in person twice. I think that he's gotten better each year. And oftentimes, I think we make the mistake of pairing him with Flacco just because they came in together. And there's so much parallel about their success that first year. But I don't think we should make the mistake of pairing him and Flacco together. I think Ryan's development was so clear because Atlanta has made the move from being a running football team, allowing him to manage the game his first year or two, you know, giving Michael Turner all those carries, to now when you watch, I mean, Michael Turner had, you know, a Chris Johnson line, you know, 11 carries, 22 yards yesterday. and they're really throwing the ball around, and they've given him the best pair of wideouts in the game in terms of White and Julio Jones in terms of a tandem. So I don't think you put that kind of investment and turn the keys over to a kid who hasn't shown the development and the capacity to lead your football team. So I think of all the guys that we've talked about so far, and maybe I'm jumping the gun because it's just 2 weeks. He's looked very good in these 2 weeks. I think Matt Ryan is the one that's knocking at the door the most at this elite level, and I think he's already surpassed and put himself in the top 10.
Okay, okay. All right. Ray, where are you at on Matt Ryan this season?
Well, I think I'm in much the same corner as Phil. I think if you look at what they've done, you know, when you have Roddy White and then you go out and pick up the other kid, Jones, I mean, you're really setting them up for success. Then during the off season, they really work on this no huddle, you know, to keep these defenses frozen. And they really put him in a position to win. And just like we talked about Phillip Rivers not seemingly have been put in that position, Matt Ryan has. And he's come up. I mean, his game is elevated, and he is a winner. So as long as they keep giving him the kind of material that they're giving him to play with, they should do fine. Although your boy Turner got himself a DUI last night. They're going to have to figure out how to, you know, keep some of that success rolling and keep some of those distractions down. But Atlanta did the same thing when Vic was down there. Atlanta seems to make the better moves in the NFL. If you think about the talent they try to put on the football field, they're always moving in the direction for winning. They don't seem to get hung up on what it costs. They seem to make good decisions down there.
Yeah, that wasn't a DUI that Michael Turner got. He got a DUM.
What's that?
Dumb?
Yeah, well.
Come on, man. You just made $300,000 in your game. You can't get a driver. Like, right. The team offers it to you for free. Take advantage of it, dog. Take advantage of the driver. Right, sit yourself in the back seat, enjoy the ride, get from point A to point B. Don't get no charge. Simple as that.
And he should have, you know, and he should have drank that. He wasn't tired. He didn't, you know, he didn't have to play that hard anyway. You know, what did he have? 11 carries.
Something like that.
You know, you should have been fresh. You should have been able to crush a few things. What
right.
You were overtired.
Right. Absolutely. All right, Lamar, what do you stand on Matt Ryan?
I agree with what Phil was saying. I think that Ryan's at that. He's knocking at the door on the elite level, and he's definitely a top 10 quarterback, and he has some great weapons in Jones or Roddy White. And even, look at Tony Gonzalez. He had a good game last night, seven catches for 70 yards, and he had a good first week. I like the moves that they made on offense and defense, and I think that this is the year that Ryan steps up and possibly Atlanta makes some noise, and he moves into – he's definitely in the top 10. You know what? I said Cutler 6 or 7. Let's move him down one and put Ryan in front of him.
Fluidity on the board. We got fluidity on the board. People are moving up and down. All right. All right. So the last one, and we're going to close up this edition of the Five on the Black Hand Side. Again, you listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio, brought to you by Resistance Digital. Last on the board, Matthew Stafford. All right, Matthew Stafford, Ray, I want you to lead us off. Is Matthew Stafford an elite quarterback? Is he a top 10 quarterback? And if he's in the top 10, is he elite?
Well, I think Stafford might be a top five quarterback, and the only reason that he would fall out is simply if he gets hurt again. When he's healthy, he plays as well as any quarterback in the league. Having a great receiver doesn't hurt that a bit. When they have you know, a running game going, where they can keep those linebackers, you know, pulled in a bit and really get those receivers a chance to get into that secondary. Stafford, he's got all the tools to do it. So, you know, I see him as an elite quarterback. I see him as a top five quarterback.
All right. Lamar, Stafford.
I like Stafford, but I don't know if I'm ready to put him in the top 10. With his health, that's a huge concern. When he's healthy, though, he's a very good quarterback, and he has some good weapons in Burleson and Megatron and Pettigrew, and I think they got another tight end. Scheffler.
Yeah, Dwayne Scheffler.
Mm-hmm. It's their running game. Their running game, a little worried about. Best can't stay healthy, and that even extends further back to college. And Kevin Smith is solid, but going back to Stafford, if he can stay healthy and continue to progress, he would be a top 10 quarterback, but it's a little, but then he can't stay healthy right now, so I'm not ready to put him in the top 10.
Okay. PhD, ride with it.
Yeah, I think Stafford's in the top 10, man. Just like Ray and Lamar mentioned, it's all about health with this kid, man. You know, being from Michigan, really being a fair-weather Detroit Lion fan, honestly, his performance over the last 2 years is one of the main reasons I've kind of come back home. So if you look at the first 5 or 6 weeks last of the 2011 season, when Stafford was playing well, Megatron was doing his thing, and Jalvin Best was playing at a top five level as far as running backs. Now, unfortunately, this young man's had some issues since his concussion last season, but if they get him back, man, in the next couple of weeks, I mean, we saw a very dynamic offense that made me think of those Buffalo Bill teams in the 90s, man, in terms of how they could whip the ball around, run it like they did with Thurman Thomas enough to keep the defense honest. Man, I think the sky's the limit with Matt Stafford, but the key question is, can he stay healthy? And last year he did, and the numbers he put up in any other year would have been very near record-breaking in terms of the total number of yards. The other thing with him is keeping his turnovers down. But so far, he's managed his risk pretty well, and I think he's in the top five right now. He's certainly in the top 10, and all we need to do is see another season of him being healthy, have a full complement of guys around him, and, man, this Detroit team, I think, is going to continue to grow each year.
Well said. So, yeah, so it looks like we got a pretty good consensus on Ryan jumping into the elite. Stafford, in our opinion, is already elite. The other guys, they got some work to do on consistency. That wraps up this edition of Five on the Black Hand Side. You're listening to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG Renegade Radio. Now we're going to talk about Major League Baseball playoff and wild card races. There are a couple of divisions still floating in the balance. We have the AL Central, which the White Sox have pulled out to a 3-game lead on the Detroit Tigers. We have the American League East, which the New York Yankees are a half game up on the Baltimore Orioles. We also have the AL West, where the Texas Rangers are 3.5 games up on the red-hot Oakland Athletics. Those are the major races. Everything else is pretty much out of reach. Atlanta's trying to catch up with Washington, but I don't really see them doing it. They're 5.5 games back of the Nationals. So the big races in the division are in the AL. All the AL divisions are pretty highly contested at this point. As far as the wild card races go, Baltimore and Oakland are hanging on to the two wild card spots in the American League, with the Los Angeles Angels coming in close behind, 3 games back. You also have Detroit and Tampa Bay within shouting distance in those races. Also, in the National League, wild card race. Very, very hotly contested. You have about five teams who are in the mix, five to six teams who are in the mix in the National League for the wild card spots. Right now, Atlanta and St. Louis are holding it down, but St. Louis is only a game up on the Dodgers, two games up on the Milwaukee Brewers, three games up on the Pittsburgh Pirates, and three and a half games up on the once thought to be dead Philadelphia Phillies, who have jumped back in it with a hot September and August to push back into it. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to go around and we're just going to take a tally of who the fellas, we're going to handicap the race a little bit, see who the fellas got pulling it out in each division. First up, I'm going to talk to my man, Lamar. Who you got in the AL Central?
Oh, man, as much as I hate to say this, I'm a Cubs fan. I'm going to have to go with the Chicago White Sox. But I'm going to go with the White Sox. A little concerned tonight as I was watching some of the Detroit and Oakland game. Max Scherzer went out with some arm fatigue, and, I mean, it's a bad time of the year for that to happen. So if they can't, if Detroit doesn't have anybody behind Verlander to go with in the playoffs, I mean, who knows how Doug Fister would be or any of their four or five starter. I think Verlander and Scherzer have got to be the hottest combo in the league right now. But I hate to say it. I think the Sox are going to win it. They stay healthy this year for the most part and picking up Euclid and Dunn is going to be the comeback player of the year. And their pitching staff has stayed healthy, too. Peavy's pitched pretty good. Chris Sale's pitched good. They just got Floyd back from the DL. And I like their closer, Addison Reed. He's had a pretty good year, too. So I'm going to have to go with the Sox as my AL Central champs this year.
And now, Lamar, you said that so begrudgingly. I mean, I understand you're a Cubs fan. I'm a White Sox fan. My question is, what, you don't like to win? I mean, why would you pick the Cubs over the White Sox? You got a problem with winning?
I got a couple more years before I win, hopefully.
You got a long time before the Cubs win.
Somebody bring your dope home?
Oh, man. Yeah, y'all can find some little nerd to blame it on next time. Who y'all going to blame it on this time? Team's been sorry for 100 years, and it's Bartman's fault. Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's I don't know what it is now, but it's going to be bad for a while.
Yeah. You know, I had to take a shot, man. I had to take a shot. I couldn't resist. PhD, who you got in the AL Central, man?
So I'm going to go with the Tigers, man. And, you know, the Tigers Yeah, I know. Somewhere RJ and Hank from our Inside the Park show is jumping up and down. But I'm going to go with the Tigers, man. And mostly because if you look at their last 15 or actually 12 scheduled games, they got a couple of rainouts they might have to make up. You know, outside of the next day or two they're playing in Oakland, they have Kansas City left and the Indians left, man, for their last 10 to 12 games. And when you look at the Chicago squad, Chicago's got Tampa Bay sprinkled in. They've got the Angels sprinkled in. They've got a couple of games with Kansas City as well as Cleveland. But I just really, really like the Tigers' schedule compared to the White Sox for the last couple of weeks of the season. So that's why I'm going with the Tigers to win the AL Central.
Okay, okay. There's rationale behind that. I'm not too mad at it. Ray, who is taking?
Well, I'd like to take the Sox. I understand what everyone is saying, you know, but they have won five in a row, and this is baseball, and it's hard to keep that consistency going. I don't like their schedule, you know, going ahead, and I think that the Tigers have the talent to come in and play. You know, being three games up, that's just not enough right now. If Detroit can start playing baseball, you know, they they can put some wins together, I think they can still win the Central.
Okay. Everybody's going with Detroit. Y'all know I'm going with the White Sox. I think they're going to hold it down. They're the team that no one believes in right now, and I think they've taken on that identity. They've taken that to heart, and they're really playing good baseball. I think they're going to fend them off. They're going to hold. Every time Detroit gains a little ground, they push it back out to about three games. Detroit's going to make another run, close it down. I just don't think Detroit is going to be able to get over the hump this year, though. I think they're going to be that team that everybody had high expectations for that doesn't make it. Going to the AL East, I'm going to have PhD jump in here since this is where his favorite team resides, and his favorite team is locked in a race with the Orioles right now. Well, speaking of the New York Yankees, who you got in the AL East, PhD?
I'm just going to pass based on the Homer principle. I got the Yankees. Now,
hey, as long as it's disclosed, it's all good. As long as we get full disclosure, it's all good. So he's got the Yankees. Lamar, who you taking?
It's a tough one. I'm going to have to go with the Yankees, too, although I got a couple of concerns. Their health right now is a little concerning. I mean, they're going to get Pettit back, and Sabathia was on the DL not too long ago, and Chamberlain's just coming back, and got Tessera out right now, looks like, till the last week or two. But I like the Yankees' experience in the last couple of years, and I like some of the moves they made. And I think I don't know who their two starters going to be once they make it in, but after Sabathia, I think they'll be all right. And I like Soriano closing. I like the Yankees' experience, and I think they'll win the AL East this year.
Okay. All right. Ray, who you got? Baltimore, Tampa, or the Yankees?
I would love to see Baltimore do something. I'd love to see Tampa come up there and mix it up a bit, but I don't see it happening. I think when you get a team with as much talent as the Yankees, it's not time to coast, but there's just, any given night they can win. They went through their slump already. They had some terrible, spots during the season. Everybody questioned them. They had their injuries, and they have their injuries now, but you don't spend that kind of money and have that kind of talent to not win. And I think with the Red Sox as down as they are, I just don't see them not winning the division. I think they have enough talent to just keep on winning.
All right. So now we move to the AL West. In the AL West, we got Oakland chasing the Rangers. Who's taking that one, Ray?
Well, I think the Rangers are who they've always been. They just clobber the ball. They've got decent pitching, but their offense is just so strong. And as long as they're playing well, they're 6-4 over the last 10. They're going to keep winning. There's a strong baseball team. Oakland, it's a great story. It's one of those things I didn't really expect. I wouldn't be surprised if the Angels overtook Oakland, but nobody's catching the Rangers.
All right. Lamar, hop in there. Who you got? AL West.
I'm going to have to go with the Rangers, too. I like the moves that they made in the offseason. The one move, picking up Yutarvish, I think that's going to be key once the playoffs start. And another comeback player of the year in Joe Nathan, I like how he settled in Texas. They have a good closer there. The bats are definitely there. Josh Hamilton's in a contract year, so I think he's going to have a pretty good playoff. And Nelson Cruz is starting to come back around, and Michael Young and Elvis Andrews. Definitely think the Rangers are going to win the AL West this year.
All right, HD,
you got, my man? Roll with it.
I'm going with the Rangers, too.
Okay, so you got the Rangers. All right. Now, looking at the card spots here in the NL and the AL, first let's talk about this NL race. All right, we got about five or six teams locked into a pretty good grudge match right now where folks are battling it out. Lamar, who are you taking in the NL?
In the NL, which division?
Wild card.
Wild card?
Yeah, St. Louis right now is being threatened by the Dodgers, the Brewers. The Phillies are in the mix. So there are quite a few teams chasing them down right now. Do you think the Cardinals can hold on, or do you see one of those teams surpassing them?
This might come as a surprise, but I think my wild card teams are going to be Washington and L.A. I think the Braves are going to take the NL East, even though they're five games out right now.
Wow.
Yep. I mean, I know that Washington Gonzalez has had a good year, and he's flirted with 20 wins, and Zimmerman is solid. I just think not having Strasburg is going to hurt Washington, and I think Atlanta's going to catch Washington and get the NL East, and Washington's going to be a wild card this year.
Okay. Okay. Mm. That's an interesting take there. Kind of catches off guard a little bit. So you got ATL chasing down Washington. That's definitely an interesting take. PhD, NL wild card, who's your favorite to take that second wild card spot right now?
So in the AL wild card, I like the Orioles and the A's to lock up the wild card positions. In the National League, I like the Cardinals to hold on, and the Phillies, they're 3.5 back entering the night, and, you know, the Phillies, I think they're pitching. Everybody's getting healthy around the right time of year. Their hitting's coming along. And they've been through this. The same reason that I think why the Rangers are going to win the AL West is they've been through this. So this is why I'm going to pick the Phillies and the Cards and that wild card.
Mm. Okay. Okay, Ray. AL wild card. Who you got taking those?
I like the Phillies, but you're forgetting about the Dodgers. You're forgetting about, you know, some of these other teams that could just sneak right in there. Everyone likes the Phillies. That pitching staff is phenomenal. But there are teams out there that still have a lot of heart, and I think the Cardinals have a lot of heart. I think they could sneak in there and just hold on.
Okay. Now, we have a couple of minutes left before we start to get into the dog of the week and the shutdown mode. Quickly, I want to get a read on the group and get your take on Notre Dame coming to the ACC and everything except football. Now, in coming to the ACC in all sports except for football, they did agree to play five ACC football games a year. PhD, how do you see this helping Notre Dame? Does it help them at all?
I don't think so. I mean, part of it is, and this is something I might have to let go, but I was brought up with conference affiliation correlating and being related to geographical location. And so it's kind of hard for me to figure out Notre Dame being in the ACC, you know, because even them being in the Big East was a stretch. I think the ACC makes it even more of a stretch. You know, in some ways I think of it like the movie Hall Pass.
Okay.
The movie Hall Pass, you know, where in that movie, for the listeners out there that may not be familiar, you know, the wives tell these two guys, hey, you got a week off from marriage this next week. Anything you do will not be held against you. So it sounds exciting, but at the end of the day, you're probably not going to do nothing anyway. So
I like it. I didn't know where you was going with that one. I see what you did there, though. Props. Keep it rolling.
So in some ways, Notre Dame was able to get a better, sweeter deal for their basketball program and their
right.
other, you know, all their other sports. But at the same time, they kept this autonomy for football. So yeah, you know, we, you know, instead of playing Army, Navy, and Air Force, we'll just play two of them. You know, and we'll mix in these other teams, and we'll let go of some of these other rivals that, you know, nobody pays attention to anyway. So I think it's a big win for Notre Dame, but I don't see what the big win is for the ACC. I just don't. Because if you want Notre Dame, you need to have Notre Dame football. You got to have it. I mean, it's like buying GM, but you don't get the Cadillac portion of the company. You know, like you don't get the Cadillac plants. So, I mean, that's the way I look at it.
Love the take. I didn't know where you were going with the hall pass reference there. I like what you did there. That was good. That was quality work. Ray, what do you think about Notre Dame joining the ACC?
No, I agree with Phil. It's like, you know, you boost your other programs, and then you get to keep the golden egg, you know. And that may come back to haunt them. It wasn't that long ago when people were wondering Notre Dame who, you know, football program wasn't doing so well. They may find themselves, you know, behind out if that football program goes down. And all of a sudden, you might want to get into the ACC, and they might, we're going to go somewhere else, you know, because that football program has been up and down. It wasn't always like that. It was the premier program in the nation as far as, you know, generating revenue and everything else. And I'm sure that even when they weren't winning, they were generating plenty of revenue. But decidedly, they've kept it, and they're keeping their independence that way. Someday, Notre Dame is going to pay for that arrogance, I'm afraid.
Yeah. One day when everybody wakes up and realizes Notre Dame is the brand it was, but that's not happening. They're still bringing in the money, the TV money they got it coming in.
They'll still get courted. You know, what happens if Notre Dame decides to jump to the Big Ten, you know?
I mean, Big Ten will take them in a heartbeat.
Yeah, so will every other conference, and I think that now that it doesn't have to take every, you know, now that the conference doesn't have to take everything else, you know, that Notre Dame may not be so highly regarded for, that makes that football program even more appealing, because you aren't going to take everything else. You may pay a
right.
more premium dollar for that program.
Yes, agreed. So now we're going to get into the Resistance Digital Dog of the Week as we close out the show. Now we're going to get into our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So, what did the real sports guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today. All right. Dog of the Week, Lamar. You know how it goes.
We need more dogs.
Dog of the Week, I'm going to have to go. It's not one of the top, you know, one of the, you know, your NFL or your NBA or MLB, but it's very special what's going on. I'm going to have to go with with John Cena and what he's doing with the breast cancer awareness. He signed on with Susan G. Komen for a cure for breast cancer, and he's going to be supporting Pink and Black. So I'm going to go with John as my dog of the week, and hats off to him for joining that cause.
Word up, word up. Very good, very good, very, very good selection. PhD.
We need more dogs.
My dog of the week is the Game Changer, Marcus the Game Changer, 21, for bringing up the Tecmo Bowl excellent condition.
I accept this word on behalf of the Academy.
As we speak right now, as we speak, I am getting my Super Tecmo Bowl out of the box, plugged in.
Did you blow in the cartridge?
That's right. I'm going to get a game in tonight. I'm going to get one in.
There you go.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Hey, Super Tecmo Bowl story, all right? I in my freshman year in college, you know, PhD is a big man on campus. And, you know, I hear he's got some pretty good chops in Tecmo Super Bowl. So, you know, I challenge him, you know, trying to the new pup on the block. I challenge him to a game. And it's a heated battle. Actually, I think he beats me the first two times we play. You know, he's using the Buffalo Bills with his defensive ace, safety Henry Jones. And I'm running with my go-to squad, which is the Philadelphia Eagles, because I have the dual threat QB Eagles, who's just a beast. It's Randall Cunningham, for those that don't know. And, you know, it's down to the fourth quarter, and I'm up. I got the Kansas Tecmo Bowl champ on the ropes as a young, wet behind the ears freshman. Got him on the ropes. He's sweating. Henry Jones can't make a play. He can't get a rap on how to shut down QB Eagles. Clock is ticking away. I got the ball. I'm trying to salt away this game, trying to get this one more score to seal it. I'm marching down the field. I'm about at midfield. And what happens? PAZ kicks the game. Now, if you kick a Nintendo, it's a wrap. It's stuck. It's going free. It's not a durable system. So, of course, the console froze. I never got to get my victory. He beats me the next time we play, and the rest is history. So, yeah, I still have sour grapes in my cup. All right. Ray, real quick, we got about 2 minutes left. Weigh in.
Well, we need more dogs.
You know, this is a new one for Dog of the Week, because I'm going to nominate yours truly for having knocked off the Game Changer for the first time in 2 years.
Hats off. Yes, sir.
I simply want to remind him that, you know, my kicker, you know, my New England kicker was the highest scoring fantasy player on either one of our teams this week. So while neither one of us had three players that met their expectations, I just did not have as bad a week as Marcus, and that makes me the dog of the week, baby.
That does. And hats off to you, Ray. You know, I had been undefeated in this league for quite some time. You know, I held it down. But, you know, all good things must come to an end. Nothing lasts forever. You know, eventually I had to get mine. I still had a shot going into about the third quarter, and then Demaryius Thomas caught a touchdown, and it was a wrap. I couldn't do anything. I was creeping up on him. Matt Bryan was giving me points, Atlanta's kicker, but it was a wrap. Game changer streak was over at 14. Great while it lasted. We're going to take it one game at a time, see if we can't win the rest of this season. You feel me? My dog of the week, Derek Carrier. Just got picked up, Beloit College grad. Just got picked up by the Philadelphia Eagles. We talked about his story a couple weeks, sometime last season. We just wanted to follow up. He did get signed by the Eagles this week. So hats off to a fellow Buccaneer for making it to the league. That is a hard road to hoe, and he has made it. So hats off to him.
again, you're listening to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio, brought to you by Resistance Digital. We're signing off for the week. Check you later. Check us out on Twitter. Hit us up on Facebook. Real Sports Guys. Peace.
My defense is impregnable, and I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Huh? I don't even know what that means.
No one knows what it means, but it's provocative.
No, it's not. It
gets the people going.
Cat's still going crazy in there. And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats. We need more dogs.